Welcome to another episode of the Pixel Drone Show, the show where we talk to industry professionals about how they use drones in their line of work. And our co-hosts are Kara Murphy, Haya Kestelo, and myself, Greg Reverdio. And if you're new to the show, make sure that you subscribe. We have the show available both on podcast format and also on YouTube. And our guest this week is Sparky Sorensen from Sparky's Video Productions. And he's one of the premier, I'm sure you've seen his videos online, a service provider in Texas. And I'm really excited because we're going to talk about videos today, which I love geeking out about, and I know the rest of the team does as well. So Sparky, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So before we go into more details about your business and all the cool things that you do, and I'm extremely jealous about all the things that you do, by the way, I want to talk about how you got into drones. What brought you into this line of work?
So I used to be a drummer in bands, and my guitar player and I started making kind of like little road videos with, you know, cell phones and cell phone apps. And then that evolved into GoPros. And then I started buying, you know, some decent Canon video cameras. And it basically, in about a year, it snowballed into my own video production company. And this is back in late 2013, early 2014. And then, of course, the Phantom 2 came out. And, you know, people started seeing drone footage. And especially in the wedding industry, it was really big. All the brides wanted drone footage and everything like that. So I got a drone, and it had the GoPro on it, and I flew that. And then I want to say probably 2015 is when my business started kind of veering off into like the drone only stuff, the aerial cinematography. And that was about the time that the Phantom 4 Pro came out, which was really a game changer. The Phantom 2s with the GoPro, they were good, but you got the fisheye GoPro, and then they were famous for flying away and just disappearing. But that Phantom 4 Pro was a game changer. And so I got, right after the 107 came out, I got my first job on an independent feature film, which was really cool. And I spent a couple of days with the director and the director of photography, and that's when I knew, like, this is what I want to do. And so then I just concentrated solely on aerial production and, in the film industry. I do a little mapping, only because I kind of fell into that also. But when it comes to me, I'll take jobs doing, 3D mapping. But other than that, it's pretty much strictly just, high-end cinematography.
And you do that well.
Well, thanks. Thank you. It's taken a long time to get here, and I still got a long ways to go, but so far it's going in the right direction.
We spoke before in another interview, I think a year and a half ago or so, and I remember you telling me about landing some bigger projects. Some of them actually took place at airports, some of them had to do with Netflix, Southwest. Can you tell us a little bit about how you were able to land big clients like that? Like, what was involved and what got their attention?
Basically, word of mouth. I get messages every day, hey, I just got a drone, I want to do what you do and stuff like that. And I mean, it's just like anything else, you need to have a skill and you need to have the knowledge of all around. You don't just buy a drone and then the next day think you're going to have a successful, business. I just tell everybody, you got to work hard, keep practicing, and networking is the biggest thing. So usually in Facebook groups and stuff like that, when people ask for, a drone guy or an aerial cinematographer, luckily, I get mentioned in most of those. And DFW Airport contacted me and said, we contacted five or six video production companies in Dallas, and we want to do some drone footage inside the airport. And every one of those production companies said, they didn't even know how to get started. And they said, you need to contact this guy. So they contacted me directly, and luckily, DFW Airport was the client. So they obviously knew all the right people, and we could, it's not like you can just go fly in the airport if you want to, which actually you can, because I did that once. We'll get to that in a minute.
Next question.
So DFW Airport, that was really cool. And then once that footage started hitting the interwebs, I got contacted by Amazon Prime Air. I've been contacted by a couple other airports, smaller you know, Class D, Class E airports, and worked on their projects. So it was really cool. So becoming known as, you know, one of the few guys that, you know, can fly inside an airport really helps. So
yeah, that's awesome. I gotta ask you now about that one time that you flew at an airport without going through all the approval process. You made me curious.
So you want to know the approval process or?
No. The story that you just referred to about the time that you.
So I still went through the approval process. But what happened was I had a lady contact me out of the blue and said, my husband is a pilot for American Eagle and he's retiring in like 3 weeks. And I want to film the shower of affection where the fire trucks line up and spray down the plane. She goes, I want to film that for my husband with a drone. And I said, okay, which airport is he landing at? She goes, DFW. And I said, okay, I know some people at DFW. I can't promise you anything, but I told her, I said, if I can make this happen, I'll do it for free. And so I contacted, you know, airport operations and said, you know, I was contacted by this pilot's wife. He's retiring. And airport ops was like, yeah, if you get the FAA approval, then we'll get you on the ramp. We'll do anything you need. So I emailed, you know, I went through Drone Zone and did the FAA thing. The inspector calls me in like 3 days and says, you know, what are you trying to do? Because, you try to explain it all in the website. And I said, okay, here's the deal. Like, you know, we want to film the shower of affection. The pilot's retiring. And I gave him pretty much the whole game plan, my flight area, where I was going to set up. And they're all about safety. So, you know, they don't care about anything else but what you're going to do to ensure that that operation is going to be operated as safely as possible. And one of the things that really surprised me is we were on the ramp at DFW International Airport, which is a huge airport. And it was the first time, well, it was actually the second time they let me fly untethered. And I was like, yes, because flying tethered, like it's horrible because you're just so limited and there's the tether brings more, just more complications than anything else. But yeah, so, you know, the FAA said, okay, we'll approve it. And so I went back to DFW ops and I said, hey, we're good. And they said, cool. And so they had, you know, two operations guys in the pickup trucks with the lights that were with me. They, you know, they escorted me out onto the ramp. We find a little area where there's just a bunch of like baggage carts being stored and stuff like that. We set up and we got the shot and it was awesome. And the other thing too is I recorded the tower. So you have the pilot, you know, they're congratulating the pilot and you can hear the pilot say, you know, thank you very much, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure. And when his wife heard that in the video, she said she just like busted out in tears. So
that's awesome. Really cool. That's an awesome story.
Mm-hmm. Wow, yeah. That's really cool. So from an approval standpoint, when you get that approval from the FAA, is there any stipulations in there that you had never seen before that are kind of out of the ordinary of things that you have to do in order to operate that close to an aircraft?
So the only thing is they said, you know, you can only fly over non-movement areas, which are basically areas in the airport that aren't controlled by the tower, by the ground frequency. So ramps, anywhere around hangars. Basically, taxiways are off limits and runways, of course, are off limits. And then the other thing was, you know, don't fly directly over the aircraft. But other than that, it was, you know, pretty standard. And the thing is we didn't know exactly which gate the plane was going to go to. So I had to do this approval thing like six times with six different areas in the airport. Like if he comes into Terminal B or if he comes into Terminal D or C. So it was basically doing the same paperwork six times over. And then whichever way, you know, I think, the morning of, airport ops sent me all the flight info. You know, he's landing at this time. He's going to be coming in on this taxiway. He's going to be entering the terminal on this. You know, they've got five or six different lines painted that the planes, you know, enter the terminal in. And, you know, so then I said, okay, so we're going with this one. And then, of course, going through the DJI unlocks. You know, that's something else you have to do. So you have to get the unlock for each possible section of the airport. So, I mean, there's a lot of work, you know, that goes into it.
Once you get that approval, is it easier to get approval in other places afterwards, or in the same? Because you did a video also for Prime Air. Was that the same kind of approval? And you're like, hey, I've been approved before, and I'm going to do pretty much the same thing here. Does it make it easier?
Not really. That's not really, you know. they don't really ask for your experience or flying in airports and stuff like that. The good thing with Prime Air is, you know, Alliance Airport is right up the street from me. So I do a lot of work in their airspace. And, you know, once you get into like those 200-foot grids, you have to start notifying the tower. So the tower's actually on speed dial. I know pretty much all of them by name. So Amazon reached out to me and said they wanted to do the drone shoot. I said, okay, let me contact the tower manager, who I've dealt with numerous times. So I called the tower manager, and he was like, that sounds really cool. He goes, you know, let's do a walkthrough and let's check it out. So I met with airport ops manager, who I also knew from an IndyCar race. I ran into him just totally out of the blue. But we met with Amazon personnel, airport ops, the tower manager, and myself and my visual observer. And that's another thing too, is anytime I'm doing anything inside an airport, I bring a visual observer, day, night, whatever, you know, just an extra set of eyes. They like to see that, of course, on any of the paperwork you fill out. But we walked the Amazon's ramp, and I came, you know, basically gave them a map where here's where I will fly, here's where I will not fly. Again, just all the safety stuff is what they want to know. And they said, okay, cool, looks good. I'll go back to my office, I'll approve everything, and you'll be good to go.
Well, I have a quick question. Have you ever had any issues with DJI unlocks?
The only issues I've ever had is when I forget to do it, and then I'm kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and my hotspot is kind of useless. Other than that, no. I mean, unlocks, and I've tested them too. Like, if my authorization is for 150, I'll type in 200. Mm-hmm. And then it'll come back rejected. So then I go back and do it for 150. So there, I don't know how they do it so fast. Like, do they just have a room of people sitting there just waiting?
I think so.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. And it's crazy because I think the longest it's ever taken me to get an unlock back is like 15 minutes. And they actually just revamped their unlock website. And so now all of your drone information is stored, your pilot information is stored. So you don't have to go in and find that, you know, your flight controller number every single time. It's all there, and you just click which drone, and it sped up the process a lot. So, yeah.
Interesting.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, especially in emergency situations, you don't want that process to take any longer, of course, than needed. You mentioned you always bring a visual observer. Can you tell us a little bit about how your team works, how many people are involved, and how you divide the tasks to make sure that these kind of drone flights are safe at an airport?
Yeah, so pretty much I try to use the same two or three visual observers every time, and they're also 107 pilots. They're, you know, they're newer guys that are trying to get their business off the ground. So they're attentive, and they're always wanting to watch and learn and see how things are done. There's been a couple times where I've hired somebody that's not really in the drone industry. And so they kind of, you know, they'll space out, or they're sitting on their phone texting or something like that. And I'm like, you know, hey, wake up. Like, you know, and so, you know, I go over the same thing with them that I go over with like airport ops or anybody. Like, here's where I'm flying, here's how high I'm flying. You know, and they're just basically there to watch, cause I'm, you know, I'm glued to my monitor, and I'm concentrating on getting the shot framed and you know, all that aspect. And then they're watching the drone, and if I start to drift a little too far or anything like that, you know, like during the Amazon shoot, my big thing is we had the taxiway, we could fly over the ramp and the taxiway, and then right next to the taxiway was the runway. And so I said, you know, your job is to make sure I don't start drifting too close to the runway. And we have headsets that we all wear, and so we can communicate, because there's sometimes where, you know, they'll have to move around to maintain, you know, visual line of sight, or I have to move and stuff like that. So.
Cool.
I was recently approached to help work on a feature film, but the producer wanted to know if I had a red camera and a free fly Astro that can carry something like that. And I do not. So I did not get it, which I'm okay with, because that is quite a hefty investment. And so my question to you is, do you use anything like that, or is an Inspire 2 with an X5 and X7 more than sufficient for a lot of these feature film projects?
So I'm in Dallas, Fort Worth, and unfortunately the film industry in DFW, well, the film industry in Texas has kind of slowed down a lot. Everything's moving to Albuquerque or Atlanta. And then of course you have New York, LA, and then a lot of stuff is done up in Vancouver and Toronto. So I get like maybe 4 inquiries a year where they want to fly either an Alexa Mini or a Red or anything like that. And about 2 out of the 4, I can talk into the X7 on the Inspire 2. It's a Super 35. It shoots raw, you know, 12-bit raw, 14-bit, depending upon your frame rate, if you're shooting, you know, 2.7K, 4K or whatnot. And that's what they want. They want that raw footage with the bit rate. You know, because it just gives them so much more flexibility in post. And the funny thing too is, I've noticed, you know, I'm friends with a lot of guys in the industry that do network TV shows like, you know, Netflix, Ozark, and stuff like that. And when they first started flying, they were flying the big heavy lifts. And now most of them are using the Inspire 2 X7 on these network shows and these movies even. So I think, you know, that X7 camera definitely, you know, helps. The X5S is also, it's a great camera, you know, Micro Four Thirds. It's just, the files just aren't as hefty as what you get from the X7. Yeah. Plus, if you're flying a heavy lift, I mean, you're looking at a minimum 3-person crew. And so the day rate for that, you know, triples. And then, you know, they're like, oh, we only have this much in our budget. So,
So I believe that on your site, you mentioned also that you offer ProRes footage. Is that something that clients ask for a lot? And is this where the Mavic 3 comes into play, or you have different options there available?
So I fly the Inspire 2 pretty much 80% of the time. A majority of my clients do want that ProRes footage if they don't want RAW. You know, the smaller stuff, like let's say, you know, like mom and pop shops, like they want some aerial footage for their website or something like that. I just shoot regular H.264. But pretty much all of my clients are production companies. So they bring me in as the aerial cinematographer. And then they, you know, basically hire freelancers and build out a crew for each individual shoot. So ProRes is pretty much the norm in this industry. And I was all ready to order a Mavic 3. I was going to order, you know, 2 of them. And there's still a few things, which there's actually a new firmware release that just came out that might make it a little, it's great for photographers. But right now for people in the film industry, it's just the workflow isn't quite there yet. And the biggest thing that disappointed me is it's 1 terabyte internal SSD. So on my shoots, we have somebody that's a DIT, which is a digital imaging technician. And their only job is to offload footage, organize footage, throw a LUT on footage, and then they produce what are known as dailies. And then, you know, if there's your in-between shots or takes or whatnot, you know, the director, the DP, producers will go over these dailies and make sure they got everything the way they want it. So you have to give your drone to the DIT and it has to be powered on, and he has to actually plug his computer into the side of the drone and offload the footage, which in a working film industry, you know, production, that's not going to work. You know, it's I don't know why they did that. It's just a huge mistake. So
is that why you were contemplating to buying 2 drones, that you can hand one off to somebody else and then keep flying with the second one? Or
no, that would become the plan. But, you know, 2 is 1 and none is none. So I've got 2 of every drone I own. I've got 2 of everything I own pretty much, because you gotta have a backup.
Well, what if you had a 512 gigabyte memory card, though? I mean, it's not going to get you as much footage, but...
Yeah, ProRes footage and raw footage, there's nothing that can record onto a micro SD.
Even
your cinema cameras, like your Blackmagic pocket cameras, your you know, your Reds, all those, anything that's ProRes and up has to be recorded into a external SSD.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. I haven't done a lot of ProRes, as you can tell.
Yeah. The only thing that would really help you is if maybe they created a proxy on a small card that you could download. Could your team download that and show that to the DP instead of showing the full footage and fully LUTed?
If it records, the Inspire 2 records on the micro SD also. So when we're in between shoots and we don't have a lot of time, I'll pop the, you know, the micro SD card out. I'll throw it in my Crystal Sky monitor and I'll kind of let the director and DP kind of scroll through the footage. So yeah, I mean, you could definitely do that. The other thing I like to do is every time I swap batteries, I switch micro SDs and I also switch the SSD in the Inspire 2. That way, if anything should happen, you're only losing the footage from that flight.
Yep.
So if you're shooting, if you're shooting all day long and all that ProRes footage is in the internal SSD of your Mavic 3 and you, you know, dunk it in the ocean, you just lost, you just lost your entire day.
Yep.
Removable SSDs, would that have been the solution?
Absolutely. I'd have two right now if they had removable SSDs. Yeah.
I hope DJI is paying attention. They watch this.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Something so, for the future.
Since we started talking about the gear, that was going to be actually our next segment. I've been flying the Cine, and the one thing that I really don't like compared to the Inspire 2 is the fact that I can have different lenses on the drone. And I know you fly the Inspire 2, you fly the X7. Would that be a limitation for you? The zoom lens is quite frankly useless from a quality standpoint on the Mavic 3. So how would you handle that flying with different lenses on there?
Yeah, and that's the other thing too, is you're limited on the lenses, and you're also limited on, the Inspire 2 has the full 360 camera. And a lot of projects will message me and they'll be like, we want you and a camera operator. And I give them my quote and they're like, oh, that's too high. And I said, well, what if I guarantee you I can do this as a single op? And they're like, okay, well, if you think you can do it, then we'll hire you at your single operator rate. And for those of you that have Inspire 2s, you can draw a box around a car, a tree, a building, a person, and you can fly the Inspire 2 any direction you want, and it stays locked on, the subject. And so with the Mavic 3 and stuff like that, you're kind of limited. Plus, my go-to lenses are the 25 and the 35. Those two lenses are pretty much everything I use. Yeah. Very rarely the 16, and then the 50, it's great, but you just, it's just a little too much lens.
It's
usually
the feature that you just referred to, where you can actually lock on a subject and fly the drone any direction, and it will keep the focus there. That actually is part of the update today that was released for the Mavic 3. So that might help you a little.
Yeah. So I'm still on the fence. I might get them for those smaller gigs. Like I said, like those mom and pop shops that just want some footage and stuff like that. And maybe they have somebody that's editing and he'd prefer the ProRes. Cause if it's not ProRes and if the budget's not there, then right now I'm flying the Phantom 4 Pro, which is great, 1-inch sensor and everything like that. But being able to jump up to that Micro Four Thirds on that Mavic 3, So, it's inevitable. I'll end up owning, one or two.
Two.
It'll happen.
Always need two, right? Two is one, one is none.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. What do you need, as far as an operating system to handle ProRes files? Because they are significantly larger. And I discovered this when I tested a Mavic 3 for DP review, just the offloading time. And then my MacBook handled it all right. But I imagine an M1 would be even more proficient.
Yeah. And the good thing is I edit in Adobe on a Mac. So the 4K, the 5.2K, even the 6K ProRes, it edits pretty flawlessly. It's just Apple's codec is just designed to work that way. But if I do get lag or anything like that, proxies. I use proxies a lot in my editing process. And so, it does take a few hours to make those proxies, depending upon how much footage you have. But once those proxies are made and they're linked in Premiere, you can edit anything like butter.
I've seen, just browsing the Facebook groups, a lot of people talking about DaVinci Resolve as an alternative to Adobe, especially because it's free and not everyone has the budget to pay Adobe's monthly fee. Do you have an opinion on that? Have you ever tried using it? Do you think it's comparable?
So I hear nothing but great things about it. Its biggest plus is color grading. Like their color grading is just so much more robust than anything else out there. I don't use it. I honestly don't do a whole lot of editing. I have the Adobe suite, so I use, and the thing that sold me on Adobe and the thing that's going to keep me with Adobe is I can do my audio in Audition. I can do, After Effects, any motion titles or anything like that, which I try to avoid as much as possible. And then, of course, Photoshop and everything else. It's all integrated. It's all super easy to go from one program to the other. you know, and then Resolve is free. But then if you want to be able to do a lot of the more high-end stuff, you will have to pay for it, pay for the upgrade. But yeah, I mean, I've heard nothing great, but I'm, it's just, you know.
That's something that you need since you already have your workflow set up. No, that makes sense.
Yeah, there's no point in, you know, learning all that stuff over again.
Yeah, I was definitely interested in your opinion on it just because I hear so much about it. So thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
I want to quickly circle back to the Mavic 3. I mean, the Mavic 3, the Cine version, is quite a bit more expensive than what we're used to for the Mavic series, at least. Do you think it's justified, the additional cost, just to get the SSD and the ProRes option?
I mean, it is a little pricey, you know, but for someone that's working, you know, like I pretty much 90% of my business is flying drones. And, you know, if the tool I need is going to cost that much, it's something you just got to bite the bullet and get it. Yep. Sure, I'd love it to be in the $4,000 range. You know, I'd have three. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, I see a lot of people complaining. But then those are also people that, you know, they don't understand ProRes. You know, they're maybe they're shooting, you know, just, you know, simple real estate, or they're using it for their YouTube vlogs and everything like that. And that's where you don't need, you know, the Mavic Air 2S is more than enough for what those, you know, what they're needing. So that's like me, you know, I drive a Chevy Blazer, and I'm not going to sit here and complain that a Range Rover is, you know, $80,000. And, you know, I don't need a Range Rover. So who cares?
Fair points.
Yeah, it'd be nice, but
it would be nice. Get two.
Yeah.
Is there anything in your current setup, in your gear setup, that you wish you had right now that you don't? Either because it doesn't exist or because it's just you haven't purchased it yet?
I would like an Inspire 3, DJI, an Inspire 3 with the new X9 camera that's on their Ronin Robo crazy looking thing.
4D.
Yeah. I would like an Inspire 3 that flies that full frame sensor. And that's the only thing I want. Although I am, right after New Year's, I'm going to finally take the plunge into FPV. So I'm good friends with the guys at Sky Candy that are just pumping out viral videos constantly. The bowling alley, the Dallas Cowboys facility. They just did a Home Depot video that's unreal. I worked with them on a project in Austin. And so I texted him the other day. I said, hey man, cause they keep asking me, when are you going FPV? When are you going FPV? And so I told him, after New Year's, I'm going to bug you, and you guys are going to send me the links to everything I need. So, but other than that, you know,
I have a few questions. Oh, so we actually had Christian Malika last week and on our show, and he wrote a book about FPV. What kind of, would you start with DJI's FPV drone, or would you start with something a little bit more organic where you need to learn how to solder and you need to learn radio frequencies and everything like that?
So everyone kind of gives me a hard time because I don't build drones. Mm-hmm. I'm not a drone builder. I'm not in the drone building business. So I've already got a line on, I told him, I said, I want ready to fly kits. Of course I'm getting two of everything. Mm-hmm. And I said, I want to be able to charge a battery and put it in the air and start flying it. And then of course, as you know, I crash and break stuff, I'll probably be, you know, on YouTube trying to figure out how to fix it. Soldering, I'm not amazing at soldering, but I've been doing soldering for a long time with RC cars. And I was always the kid that took apart the VCR and then put it back together. And then it would play the footage backwards for some unknown reason. Cause I got two wires crossed. But I do have, I've got these little guys right here that I fly around the house when I'm bored. So, you know, we're already kind of working on it. But no, I tell people, you know, I'm not going to be building my own kits or anything like that. If something major happens, I'll send it back to who I buy it from, and they'll fix it and then send it back to me. So.
What is the big attraction as far as you're concerned when it comes to FPV drone flying? I mean, are clients asking for that kind of footage, or you just see the potential, you want to be able to provide that kind of footage? And an additional question, do you think FPV drone footage is going to take over because it offers you so much more freedom in how you fly the camera around?
So, yeah, I've been getting a lot of inquiries. And to answer the second part of your question is, I'm going to get the little Cinewhoops, the ducted Cinewhoops with the GoPro.
Yep.
Because the only reason I want FPV is because I want to be able to fly indoors and I want to be able to fly around people. And obviously when you're indoors, there's no FAA regulations, but obviously you have liability. So I need the ducted protected props. I'm not going to be flying like a 6-inch or 8-inch with exposed props because I'm going to, you know, cut someone's face open. So that's what I'm going to go with. As far as FPV taking over, FPV is a style. There's always going to be a place for FPV footage, and then there's always going to be a place for that Inspire 2 cinematic stuff. You got kind of two different styles. It's like a street bike versus a dirt bike. You know, I'm not going to take a dirt bike out for a cross country trip.
Yeah.
And I'm also not going to take a street bike out on the motocross tracks. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, would you say that the DJI FPV is almost like a hybrid in that sense? Because I think that one you probably could fly in a more cinematic mode, right? And then still get the FPV freedom, if you will, where you can fly it in more organic ways.
Yeah, it's definitely like a hybrid for sure. And, you know, the big thing about that too is it's a good one to use for a transition drone because, you know, the typical FPV drones, I mean, you can't just like let go and the drone hovers if you get into trouble. So if you just let go, it's just going to keep going and crash. Whereas the DJI FPV drone, if you start getting into trouble, you can just let go and it will hover. So I think it would be a good transitional drone.
So DJI, again, if you're listening, we need a small DJI CineWhoop drone with ducts and everything that that can hover and fly safely indoors.
Exactly.
2022, please.
Yes.
I hope it's on its way.
Yeah.
Oh, so what do you think about remote ID, and is it something that's going to impact the way you fly?
I am all for it, mainly because I'm in a big market, Dallas-Fort Worth, and every day I see somebody doing something they shouldn't be doing, every day. Our area, Dallas-Fort Worth, is, I would say, 80% controlled airspace. We have two major airports, and then we've got just... You could just basically throw darts at the map and you're going to hit airspace for a Class D airport. So I'm all for remote ID. I do everything by the book. That's one thing I've tried to, like, you know, pride myself on. And, you know, it's not really going to hinder me at all, besides having to buy the modules to put on my Inspire 2s, or we'll see where we're at, you know, by then. And then I'm hoping it knocks a lot of the guys out of there that are doing stuff illegally. They're not certified. They don't care. Like, there's a guy, you know, the other day that wanted to fly in downtown over at night. And, you know, he's like, well, I'm still 400 foot within a building. And I'm like, you're in Class B airspace. So you're limited to the grids. That's a hard 400 foot, no matter what, unless you're deviating from a police helicopter that's coming right at you. So I'm all for remote ID. That way, you know, when the 107 came out, a lot of the guys kind of disappeared, the smaller guys that were doing things illegally. And then when I think remote ID, it's going to weed out a lot of these other guys that are doing stuff. And then, you know, it just helps out our industry because clients will contact me and like, oh, somebody flew over Reunion Tower, which is 470 feet tall in a 400 foot grid in Class B airspace. We want a foot, you know, we want a shot like that. And I say, well, I can't do it. And then they're just going to go and find that guy and he's going to do it again. So I hope that helps.
How important is it for you and your business to be able to fly beyond visual line of sight?
It's something that I don't really come into that much. You know, I'm doing cinematography. Very rarely do I ever fly more than 1500 feet away. You know, the only time really is if I need to orbit a building or something like that. So I'll put visual observers on the other side of the building and we've got my headsets, you know, and stuff like that. So the thing with the visual line of sight, that's going to be big in the inspection industry. You know, your power line inspection guys. Cause I know those guys, they would like to be able to inspect, you know, five or six towers parked in one spot instead of having to drive, you know, every two towers and whatnot. So it doesn't really affect me, but I do know it does affect a lot of people. Yeah.
Is there anything in the regulation at the moment that is hindering the way that you do things that you wish it was easier? I mean, beyond visual line of sight may have been an example, but is there anything else that you think is maybe a little too much, or you think it was just easier?
The only thing that really comes into play a lot is, you know, flying over moving vehicles. People, there's a lot of highways here in DFW, and they're like, we want to fly over the highway right up to the sign on our building, you know, like ABC company or whatever. And I tell them, I can't do it. And the thing is even if it was legal from a liability standpoint, I probably wouldn't do it still. Or anytime somebody wants me to fly in a downtown area or a heavily populated area, I always say, okay, Sunday morning at sunrise, because it's almost like a ghost town. That's your safest time to do something like that. But yeah, as far as a liability, because the last thing you want to do is have an Inspire 2 crash in the middle of a highway. It's just not going to be good for a lot of people. So
have you had any crashes where obviously it was out of your, you know, you did everything you could, but yet you had a battery failure or you had something go down?
So I've actually had two battery failures in Phantom 4 Pros. They dropped like a rock. One went into a pond. The other one went into a muddy construction site. I did about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I flew the green starting flag into Texas Motor Speedway for an IndyCar race. And so I told the client and Texas Motor Speedway, you know, I want to be able to do this like 10 times flawlessly before we do it on live national TV. And of course, the very first flight that I was testing it, you know, the track is empty, nobody's there. I had the flag only dangling from like three links of chain. So the flag was right there underneath the Inspire 2. And as soon as I turned into the wind, the flag blew up into the props and the Inspire 2, you know, crashed in Texas Motor Speedway turn 3, crashed right there in the middle of the track. So I think before I even got on the track and drove to pick up the carnage, I called my buddy Frank over at Carolina Drones that some of you guys might know. I called Frank and I said, I need you to overnight an Inspire 2 right now. And so he goes, okay. He goes, I've got my girls driving it to FedEx right now. You know, he had to take all the batteries out, obviously, because you can't overnight that stuff. But he overnighted the drone. And then we went back to, you know, resuming our tests. And so I had like 6 feet of chain this time. And then we even weighted the bottom of the chain with some bolts. That way, there's no way this thing could go into the props. So that was, I'm glad it happened on the testing and not on a NBC live broadcast where they cut to the camera on the drone. And then, you know, that just would have been embarrassing. And then I've had a couple other where you try to thread the needle and don't quite make it. So they hurt.
Pretty good score for flying that much.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm lucky. So where's wood? I don't. Yeah. But anyway, if anything happens today, I'm coming after you.
Uh-oh. Blame the show. How much in liability insurance do you carry? I mean, I imagine you have quite a large fleet, and for some of these more commercial, mainstream commercial projects, I could imagine that their requirements, the production studios probably require more than $1 million. But as you get up higher and higher, it's costlier on an annual basis. I mean, is there some kind of package deal, or do you mind sharing what that looks like?
So I carry $5 million across my entire fleet, and I've got seven or eight drones, two of which belong to a client. So wait, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So I've got 5 that are basically like in use. And then I've got a bunch of like, there's a Phantom 4 up there on the shelf that's been shelved for years because it just flies wonky. But yeah, I went through Global Aerospace for years and years and years. They were great. I had 2 claims with them. My rate never really went up considerably. They never dropped me. I carry hull coverage on anything that's more than a Phantom 4 Pro. I don't carry hull coverage on the P4 Pros. If I crash one, I'll just buy another one. No sense in just, you know, putting that on your insurance history. But I just switched last year over to Skywatch. So now I have everything through Skywatch. And again, $5 million, and then hull on the Inspire 2s and everything like that. But Skywatch has been great. And Leo with Skywatch, anytime I have an issue or anything like that, I just, you know, I'll shoot him an email and he's like, okay, man, we got it taken care of. And the thing I like is I can add additionally insured on the app. Like I was shooting a music festival a couple of weeks ago, and they came up with like three more companies that needed to be added as additionally insured, like 20 minutes before I'm supposed to start flying. So I just went into my app and I added them and sent them the PDF via email, and everything was good.
Nice.
Yeah. I do rarely they want the 10 million. But 5 million is usually more than enough.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thanks for sharing.
No problem.
So Sparky, I mean, now that you've been a very successful commercial drone pilot for a couple of years, like, what would you advise people that are new to the industry and basically aspire to become commercial drone pilots? Like, what kind of tips and hints or advice would you give them?
Watch a lot of YouTube videos on camera settings, capturing cinematic footage. Mm-hmm. People just, they go straight up to 400 feet and they fly around, you know, and 90% of my stuff is like less than 100 feet. Yeah. You know, very rarely do I need to ever go any higher. It's just practice. And the biggest thing too is, you know, your demo reel, which I'm about to release my new demo reel. But your demo reel is pretty much like your resume. And anytime I get an email from a production company, they're like, you know, send us your kit. Like basically all my gear. And I have a PDF package that I just drag and drop, and it has everything in it. And then I send them a link to my demo reel and have variety. A lot of guys will go out and, like, I can't tell you how many people have 2-minute demo reels that are like downtown Dallas. I'm like, you need to show variety, like film some cars, film an ocean, go get some jet skiers, you know, get a couple of shots of downtown Dallas. That's cool. But you just need a variety so they know that you can do more than just, you know, jump up to 400 feet and just capture a city skyline. And then the other biggest thing is networking. It's all about networking. You know, it's every job I get is a referral from somebody else that I've worked with in the past. I do kind of sort of have a little reputation for, you know, kind of irritating some people in Facebook groups. But it's because they were probably doing something illegal and they didn't want to hear about it. You know, so there's that. But you can, anybody that's ever contacted me, I mean, I tell them, like, there's no secret sauce. I can't tell you how you're going to be successful in 6 months. You know, it's, you've got to be able to do it. But I can at least, you know, save them some steps. You know, if you want to shoot, you know, like I tell them, if you buy a drone, you got to figure out what you want to do. Don't buy a drone. You know, create a website and say, we do inspections, mapping, search and rescue, you know, this, you know, find your niche, your one or two things, and focus on that, and you'll be successful. It's the guys that try to do every single thing under the sun that they don't make it.
That's a great, that's a great tip.
Then I buy their drone for half price. So
yeah, you can't be an expert at everything. So don't try to do everything. That is a great tip.
Yeah. It's you know, jack of all trades, you know, master of none type of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I want to do a quick note before Carrie, you ask your question. Oh. If you haven't seen one of Sparky's demo reel, please go on the website and find one. And I can't wait to see the new one, because I know you posted kind of a raw on your Facebook and asked for comments. And I watched it in awe, and you were asking which of the footage we didn't like as much. And I was like, I just can't find one. They're all just amazing. So I look forward to seeing that one.
Actually, I think you put two clips, and I think I did cut one of those clips out.
Oh, good. Yeah, there were two that were just not as cool as the others. But
yeah,
they were
yeah. And it's just so hard. I've got, like, I spent, like, we had a rainy week. And that's usually when I start my demo reel, is, you know, usually around August, September. And we had, like, 4 days of rain. So I just started grabbing selects, which are basically, you know, you have a 2-minute clip, but that 4 seconds, that's your select. And I started throwing all my selects in a timeline. And I had an 11-minute video that I have to trim down to. You know, you want your demo reel to be about 60 to 90 seconds, but my demo reel's 2 minutes. I mean, I can't get it shorter than that. So that's just, it's the hardest thing. And the thing also is, anybody that's going to book you, they're going to know in the first 20, 30 seconds if you're worth it or not. So you always want to kind of start that demo reel out with, you know, your bangers. Because if you start out with 3 or 4 clips that just aren't interesting, they're just going to, you know, they're going to go away. So,
yep.
How close are you to finalizing that reel?
I think it's done.
Brad. It's been a pleasure.
So you had mentioned that you watch YouTube tutorials, and that's something I do, and a lot, you know, some of my friends in the industry do as well. I'm curious, what, off the top of your head, if you know it, who are some of your favorite creators?
Man, obviously, you know, Peter McKinnon, he's one of the, and he's not really a drone guy, so to say. But he's just, the stuff he does is unreal. You know, Parker Wahlbeck, you've got, actually, I'm going to have to open up, hold on here. Let me open up YouTube real quick. Potato Jet, Gene. I love Potato Jet. Mm-hmm.
I love Make Art Now.
Yeah, yeah.
Josh Yeo at Make Art Now. I love his
stuff. He's good too.
He's really good.
You know, Becky and Chris, or Chris and Becky,
yes.
They make cool videos with their helicopter and stuff, and they fly FPV also.
Yep, they've got that little R22. And actually, I did a project with an R22. You'll see a couple of clips in the demo reel, but that was really cool, flying right next to one of those. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, Chris Howe's pretty good. Maddie Hapuya. You know, I don't really watch anybody that's strictly drone related. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch out there that I have seen, but nobody that really, you know, sticks out. And then as far as,
except Pixel,
you know,
Drone Show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
of course.
As far
as, you know, like the people that review drones, you know, and I've even posted, you know, a few times, I'll be watching your drone news, Greg. So I watch a lot of that, your drone news and everything like that, but. 51 Drones. I watch him a lot. Film Riot, they're actually local here in DFW. I'm still trying to connect with those guys. And then, of course, you know, everybody has to watch Ken Dono, because he's just an unfiltered, he'll tell you how it is.
I want to see you and Ken talking about stuff. I'm going to tell Ken to bring you on his Drone Bro, because he would,
guys
would be awesome. That would be an awesome episode.
I
mostly watch YouTube tutorials, but every now and then I will pay for a course if it's specialized or something that I think is worthwhile. And I mostly do photography, and Mer Watson, who's based out of Australia, is one of my favorite drone photographers, and I'm going to purchase her course soon on creative. I think it's called Creative Classes, but are there any paid courses that you'd recommend, not only for videography, but just for learning the drone business in general?
The only thing I really did when I first got into this business was I had a buddy that was a college professor, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to give you my password and link to, oh man, why am I drawing a blank?
LinkedIn.
No, It's a you can basically, there's like tutorials and classes on pretty much anything under the sun. Lynda.com.
Yeah, Lynda, which is on LinkedIn now. Yeah. Yeah.
He gave me his Lynda.com password, and that's when I was using, like, you know, free editing apps. I think actually, what app was I using? I can't remember. I bought it at Best Buy off the shelf for like $60, and it was a good video app, you know, editing. But then when I made the jump to Premiere Pro, I bought it, I downloaded it, I opened it up, and I was like, I don't know what to do. So I spent like 2 weeks on Lynda.com watching from naming your project all the way through to like editing and everything to like exporting your project. You know, so that was the big thing. But yeah, I know there's a lot of master classes out there. I think Spielberg has one that I want to watch. I'm at, like, Spielberg. I've got almost every movie poster on my wall is a Spielberg film.
And those master classes are amazing. Yeah, if you haven't done one, they're amazing. They're expensive.
That's on my
list.
That's on my list for sure. But no, other than that, I mean, you can just get so much free education off YouTube. It's just, you know, like, let's say you're filming a race car, just put, you know, filming race cars with drones, and you know, like Nurk will pop up, or somebody, or Johnny FPV or Potato Jet and those guys, and they'll definitely get you in the right direction and give you a lot of tips. So
I want to switch gears maybe a little bit. How has COVID affected your business, if any?
COVID hurt. COVID hurt a lot. There was probably when early 2020, when everything was shutting down, there was 2 months where I just didn't do anything, except for I totally rearranged my office, painted the walls, everything like that. Like, I had nothing to do. Film production pretty much stopped. The only thing that saved me is I do work with a couple of DOD contractors where I'm their drone pilot, and they use me for radar tracking, camera system tracking, and we'll go up to military bases and they will actually shoot me down with lasers. So it was getting to the part where I was going to have to start, like, you know, selling blood or sell, you know, children or something like that. And they called and said, "Hey, we need to book you next week." And I was just like, oh, like, thank you so much. And then, of course, you know, things started slowly opening back up, and things are good. I've always been in the black. I've always met all my goals, which I'm very fortunate, you know, to have still hit all those. But yeah, COVID is still, I'll get, you know, things where, like, you have to be vaccinated, and, you know, I'm not anti-vax or anything like that. I'm more like, you know, I should have a choice of, you know, what gets injected into my body. But there's been a few gigs where they're like, you know, "Oh, well, you have to be vaccinated." And I'm like, you know, "Sorry, can't help you." So I've missed out on some pretty decent productions because of that. But no, I mean, we're still rocking and rolling, still busy. So very fortunate. Yeah.
I know you've been taking on a new hobby recently with the 3D printer that you get. Can you quickly talk about what that is?
So I bought a 3D printer and I'm still dialing it in. And I mean, I'm printing just, my wife hates it because she doesn't want my office to be cluttered, but I've got, like, I'm a big Back to the Future fan. So I've got some Back to the Future, Indiana Jones, just like knickknacks. And then I don't know if you can see, on my wall back here, any airplane that I've filmed with a drone within, like, ridiculous close proximity, I've got a little 10 by 14 print, and then I have a shelf with the die-cast model. And so I added the Antonov AN-124 to that list, and so I've got it over here. So my office is starting to get full of knickknacks. But yeah, I mean, I've been printing just things left and right with the 3D printer, just getting it dialed in for when I do get those FPV drones and I need to start printing parts. So it's addicting. It is.
I imagine.
Yep.
So we're getting to the end of the Pixel Drone Show. The one question we always ask everybody that we talk to in this show is, what is your current favorite drone, Sparky?
Inspire 2.
Inspire 2? Why?
Yeah. I mean, it's been my workhorse. It wins Employee of the Month every month. I give it a trophy. You know, but it's just for everything I do, it is the workhorse. But if we kind of go away from that, I do a little bit of mapping. I have a client that they're basically, they're a surveying company. And so they're like, well, what do we need for the best maps? We want to be able to map. And these, they map like 6,000 acre ranches. And I said, well, you're not going to do that with a multi-rotor. Like, it's going to take you 2 weeks with a Phantom 4 Pro or something like that. So they bought me a Wingtra. And the Wingtra drone, it's a big orange drone. It's got a Sony A6000 in it. But we've done a few large projects with that in the past month. And that thing is just amazing. It is awesome. So if you're out there and you map large sites, get a Wingtra. It's pricey. It's going to hurt, but it's going to be the best investment you ever make. So hopefully they send me a check for that.
They are really cool.
Yeah. We were going to wrap up this show, but now we have like 10 more questions to ask you now. Greg, it's all yours. You can wrap it up.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Sparky. I knew this was going to be a really cool conversation. Anytime we talk about videography, this is, I just love hearing how people do this. And especially, I've been following you for a long time. We're friends on Facebook. And I just love when I see your videos, I'm like, oh, I know this is Sparky. I don't even have to look at the name. So thanks for being with us. Where can people find more information about all the cool things you do?
The biggest thing is, you know, my personal Facebook. I'm bad with social media. I try to post on Instagram, Sparky's Video Productions. I'm pretty much the only Sparky's Video Productions in existence. So you'll find me, Google it. You know, my website's got my demo reel. And then I try to, once every couple of months, I've got a, you know, featured video that I'll kind of swap out. But yeah, Facebook is where I'm at, and that's where I post pretty much daily, you know, all the things I'm out doing.
Well, so. Get ready to have about 1,000 new friends on Facebook. So, thank you all for watching. If you like the show, make sure that you subscribe. Make sure you leave a comment as well for our guests, for our hosts, and we're happy to interact with you guys. And we post videos every Tuesday, so we'll see you guys next week.
Awesome. Thank you very much, guys.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.